Wonderful.
So it's my pleasure to welcome back Ding Ren, who's visiting us from University of Toronto. Ding did her PhD in Beijing in particle physics 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And since then, she's been a postdoc at the University of Toronto. So she's worked on a variety of topics ranging from particle physics to analogies and connections between potential connections between confinement phenomena in QCD and gravity. And today she's going to tell us about something new in understanding black holes in the context of quadratic gravity.
Okay, so thanks very much. Thank you, Mia Yash, for inviting me for the talk. And today I'm going to talk about my recent paper with Professor Bob Podom. This is not quite a black hole, and it also has some connection with our previous paper. So in this talk, I'm going to tell you some novel horizonless object in quadratic gravity. So this object, it appears like a black hole in many aspects, but also there seems some hope that we can tell them apart. So in the talk, you will see why this object has such a funny name. But before talking about any details, I need to show you why this kind of exploration is interesting. And almost 1 year ago, LIGO announced this very exciting first direct detection of gravitational waves from a compact binary called Lessons. And this signal is so big that you can almost already see its feature by eye from the screen data. It has roughly three stages, and the in spiral stage can determine the individual mass and the spin. And from the data, we know that this binary has a very compact, massive object. And in the ring down stage, the merged object oscillates oscillate in the least damped mode and relax to the final stationary state. And from the LIGO collaboration, we see that this different part of data are consistent with the binary black hole merger from general relativity. In the end, to really justify that we really see the black hole, we need the evidence for its most essential feature, the event horizon. And whether the event horizon exists or not is actually not such a simple question to answer. Various observations of the astrophysical black hole candidate are actually closely related to some crucial scale, a crucial radius of the space-time around the object. So one is the innermost stable circular orbit, which sets the inner edge of the accretion disk. And also in the binary merger, it will roughly tell when the in-spiral phase terminates. The other important radius is associated with the photon circular orbit, also called the light ring. And in the event horizon telescope, this light ring could be imaged. And in the gravitational wave signal, it is believed that the dominant ring down mode is actually directly related to the excitation of this light ring. Just right after LIGO's discovery, as highlighted by Vitor Cardoso and collaborators in recent paper, they are saying that if we have some ultra-compact horizonless object, which has a space-time agree with the black hole, but all the way down to the light ring, then they are saying the gravitational wave signal of this object can display a ring down at early time, which is similar to a black hole, even though that this object, because they have quite different boundary conditions, they may have just totally different quasi-normal modes. So this is an example from their paper. This is a waveform for radial inflow of a particle into a wormhole as example of that. And here you can see this exact agreement with the early time ring down with the black hole. If that horizonless object has some interior boundary, which have reflecting boundary conditions, then this inertial ring down will be reflected back and leak out of the light ring. So this bounce back and forth will produce a train of icos in the gravitational wave signal, which is absent in the for black hole. And in principle, like at late time, the real quasi-normal modes of this object may show up. But from the numerical results, it sounds like, at least for the first few icos, it's directly related to the inertial ring down. So this tells that, because currently from the LIGO data, this is exactly the mode that has been identified. So from this, we cannot rule out this horizonless object. Recently, Mia Yeshi and collaborator, they are trying to look for this icos in LIGO data, and they find some interesting results. In the future, if we are able to have more data, this could be a hopeful way to tell apart a ultra-compact horizonless object and a black hole. Theoretically, the existence of horizon also raises this problem of information paradox for the black hole evolution. And in the effective theory point of view, if the entirety is to be recovered, they seem to imply the local QFT description needs to be drastically modified at the horizon. And this stimulates a lot of work in very different directions. But one possibility is that probably event horizon has never been formed. And like one example in this quantum gravity perspective is a possible proposal from the string theory. Or it may have something to do like you have some quantum phase transition for the matter in the gravitational collapse, and then it does something called the gravistar, which has the theta integral. So far, all these models are either unrealistic or it needs a great degree of fine tuning. So because now we're in this era of gravitational wave astronomy, so it motivates us to find better candidate for this ultra-compact horizonless object. And so in this talk, I will just show you another example that a proposed UV completion of quantum gravity may give you this very drastic modification of the Schwarzschild metric right at the location of the Wolpe horizon. So in the talk, I will first very briefly talk about this asymptotically free quadratic gravity as a possible UV completion of gravity. And it's a pretty old theory, but here we give it some new perspective. And with this, we can find the non-trivial background solution in a classical theory that captures mean feature. And then with this, I'm going to show you this novel horizonless solution. We call it 2-2 hole. And it's sourced by dense matter in this theory as a quite general solution. And it has the exterior, which is well described by the Schwarzschild metric, well down to the Wolpe horizon. And it also characterized by an interior, which has very small volume and seemingly in a Nicholas time-like curvature singularity and the deep gravitational potential. And in the end, with this solution, I will show you some interesting implications for this solution, including the time delay for the ICO that I just mentioned, and also about some discussion of the entropy. Okay, so let's start from this theory. So as a very old candidate of quantum gravity, it's just a simple generalization of general relativity by all the possible quadratic terms. And at d equal to 4, this action is just characterized by one mass scale and two-dimensional coupling. Four decades ago, Daly proved that when you expand this action on a flat background, this theory is actually perturbatively renormalizable. And this is associated with that at high energy, the propagator of the graviton has such a behavior so that the UV divergence is actually well under control. And so with this, people can calculate the one-loop beta function for the two-dimensional coupling, and they find they are asymptotically free. And especially here, this wild tensor term play a big role in this story. Normally in the standard picture, this running coupling is assumed to be weak at the mass scale as determined in the action. In this case, this big M just identified at the Planck scale. But in this picture, the theory runs into a very severe problem because the spin 2 sector of the perturbative spectrum actually have a massive pole which has the wrong side of kinetic term. So this would either imply the vacuum instability or the problem to reconcile the probability interpretation and the unitarity. So still, people are arguing whether we can make any sense for this theory in this picture. But here, for us, it sounds like this ghost problem, as I just described, is closely related to this assumption that about the weak coupling. So basically, it assumes that for any relevant process, physical process, the perturbative analysis tell you what the true physical spectrum is. But if we look at this action a bit more closely, there's another big part of parameter space that has totally different picture, because if this M like start very small, and then this running coupling could already get strong at some higher scale. So that means all the perturbative pole that I just show you already falls into the non-perturbative region. So
what is QQG?
The quantum quadratic gravity. Because later we are talking about some classical version, so let's make it clear to be quantum. So it will be possible that the non-perturbative effect could just change propagate a lot so that there's just no ghost in the physical spectrum. Then all this naive version of the ghost problem does not exist. Only quite recently, there are some thought along this line. And here I just don't.
Sorry, can I ask you a question about
that? Right.
So if you, in QCD, this is true, like at high energy you have quarks, but if you go to low energy, then you don't talk about quarks, you talk
right.
about
plasmons. Right, right, you have totally different spectrum, physicals.
Right, so, don't you expect something similar to that to exist for gravity that, you have, basically, maybe this is the right theory in the UV, but when you go to the IR,
right.
it's just a different.
Yeah, exactly, this is what, we are speculating. So yeah, here I just give a very brief summary of what we got. So as Nyaya said, so because it's very hard to really work out what strong dynamics will be like for the gravity. So as a first step, we're just making analogy with the well-known quantum chirodynamics. And so you already see both theory has nice UV behavior and are characterized by the a strong scale from the running coupling. And in QCD, we know that the gluon is actually, due to the non-perturbative effect, it has been removed from the physical spectrum, and a mass gap is then developed. And so in the gravity side, we are here just by making some analogy between the full gluon propagator and the full graviton propagator, and also we assuming that the non-perturbative effects are similar based on some arguments. And then we reached a conjecture about what can happen in this non-perturbative region of the quadratic gravity. So when the mass scale in the action is non-zero, then we're seeing all this perturbative pole just removed from the physical spectrum. And now you have the mass gap controlled by this scale in the action. But if the action starts to be purely quadratic, then the massive graviton pole emerge, and it becomes the only light particle in the physical spectrum. So it could be true that there will be some other state which is related to this strong scale. But we haven't realified any argument for that yet. But at least for this massive graviton, just similar to that in QCD, the low energy theory can be described by the parallel Lagrangian. Here, if assuming the diffeomorphism is not broken by the strong dynamics, then the massless graviton is expected, just described by GR, with derivative expansion. And now the low energy scale, the scale in this theory, the Planck scale just determined by this strong gravity scale. So of course, this is just a conjecture about what can happen. And if we want to prove this really happened, there much more need to be done. But here we just take this as one possibility. And the thing that if it has any chance to be true, then it shows a quite interesting picture about what gravity could be like. So in the low energy or small curvature, the theory is just described by the standard GR with high order correction. And around the Planck scale, the semi-classical description breaks down. But this region with strong quantum gravity effect only spans the limited range. And when you are in the super Planckian energy or curvature region, then the physics can be just described by this quadratic action with weak coupling. So in such a picture, then we can ask what kind of non-trivial curved background we can have. Because of this picture, we can, as an approximation, we can find solution.
I wasn't sure where to bring this up. It seems as good as any. So if I said, told you that I know for a fact that this theory has a Hamiltonian, regardless of what the couplings are, that's
right.
I'm adding from below,
right.
And this seems to me to make the theory nonsensical, what would you say in response?
So that is true at the classical level.
I'll make exactly the same assumption.
So you know, like, we can do quantization in different way. Canonical quantization is definitely one way. But here we're trying to say we can defy the quantum theory, say, like, by path integral. So by saying that, I mean that, yes, the classical action has some problem, but probably we have some non-trivial effect in the measure. So that measure may kill the problem in the classical action. So this is exactly what, when we write that paper, what we're going to show about how this similarity works.
I don't see how that can happen, but if you claim, I'd love to hear it. But
I guess the point is that there's a classical Hamiltonian which is unbalanced from below. We do some magic to it.
No, but the same
that
thing,
is not an
no, no, but the same thing is true for, well, other than couples running does not help this problem. This may be a discussion better had over lunch. But,
yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, we can discuss it more on the lunch about what exactly I mean by the magical stuff. So now I'm just saying, suppose we have such a picture, then we can still ask the question, can we get something like some interesting non-trivial background out of it? And so as an approximation, because it has this nice UV and IR region, which can both describe by the perturbative theory, so we just approximate it by a classical action, which has the same limit in this two region. So this action actually has been studied a lot in the previous work, but it's normally just created as a truncation in the derivative expansion. And then in that view, you will have problem with high order term if you want to describe any solution which have large curvature. In the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk about this microscopically large 2-2-hole solution, which has a small curvature exterior and a super Planckian curvature interior. So it's for such a solution, I'm saying that this type of configuration can be well approximated by the classical theory in this action. So in the rest of the talk, I will just stick with this classical action and tell you what kind of solution I will apply.
So basically, somehow you're saying that as a middle a strong region, you shrink it to zero, or it's not there?
So I'm saying for this particular solution, that region is very small. So then, because here I'm just saying it's an approximation, like the leading order approximation, then at least for this two region, we're saying it gives some idea about what the configuration in the quantum theory will be like.
Sure.
Yeah.
motivates you to think that the real theory of gravity as you go to high curvatures is going to have the same limits as it does at small curvatures?
No, it's not the same. So the theory at high curvature is actually, so here I'm actually focusing on that quadratic action I already have at the beginning. So here I assume it just has a quadratic term. So I mean, these are just like the effective theory, like the chiral Lagrange, which is just totally coming from the low energy, for the low energy theory. But this is like the true theory, like the action I'm claiming is the true theory that.
We'll see what you mean by it. It has the same limits in small and large curvatures, but what I'm wondering is why you, I mean, I don't quite know what that means yet, but I'm assuming that means that, you know, gravity behaves the same way. I think it's a very small curvature, like we're used to dealing with, and then you'll say that it has the same limits in a large curvature, and I'm just not sure why would you say that as that?
You're asking why aren't there other all sorts of powers in curvature?
Yeah, exactly. But this is already a normalizable theory, so you don't need higher powers.
Yes. So, well, I mean,
technically a very bad argument.
Well, no, it could be, but you don't have to. You don't have to have it. I mean, there's a question with the ghost, which is the main problem. But I mean, if you have a normalizable theory, you don't have to.
Right. So, as I showed at the beginning, if you just take the quadratic term seriously, then. Does no high the theory is renormalizable, does no need of high order term. It's only for the low energy theory when the propagator is set up by the Einstein term. So in that case you got all the high order terms just produced by the loop. Yeah, we can talk more about this later. Right, so now I'm going to the main part of the talk is about this new solution. So here we focus on the static spherically symmetric solution, which are described by two independent functions. And in the classical quadratic action, when the both quadratic terms are non-zero, we need five inertial conditions to fix the field equation as shown here. So with this enlarged number of inertial conditions, there's just no Volkov theorem in this theory. Besides the vacuum solution in DR, we actually don't really know the analytical solution in this theory. And usually we need the numerical, we need to find them numerically. But there's still a way to characterize this solution. For example, we can classify them by the zeroth expansion around the origin. It's characterized by the leading power in the theory, the expansion for the two functions. So just similar to GR, we have the non-singular solution and the Schwarzschild-like solution, but now they are described by more free parameters. And what is most interesting here is that this theory has a brand new 2-2 family. So in this family, both functions start with R squared term. So that means the whole metric is vanishing at the origin. And this family is described by five free parameters, which is the same number as the inertial condition you needed for the differential equation. So in this sense, we will say this family is actually the most generic family in the theory. In this family, the smooth matter distribution only enter into zeroth expansion at very high order, so their effects are pretty mild. And because this is such a large parameter space, and we find that the subclass that is interesting. So this subclass includes just the even power in the zeroth expansion. So it's just described by two free parameters. And so you can see it's actually this subclass is actually very similar to the non-regular solution we have here. So later on, I'm using this two family to by the numerical solution.
Sorry, how do I suppose you interpret the vanishing metric anywhere?
Well, vanishing, I'm just saying this metric function is zero. So it's a coordinate dependent statement.
No, because I have well defined surface area, so I can say, well, the area enclosed within this radius, and then I shrink it, and then I end up with no metric whatsoever. So what? How do you interpret this?
Well, so I haven't think about to describe that in that way, but actually this, at least by just looking at this function, they all vanishing actually denote that this is the curvature singularity. So yeah, so actually later on I will address this problem, say to show you why it might not be a problem if we have a curvature singularity here.
So can I understand something? So I mean in GR you have a 1 plus these things, like the, I mean because you have Minkowski at the center, right?
In GR you like if you assume there's no singularity, then you only got this possibility, right?
Here you say A2, but there's also A0, or I don't know what that means. I mean, because there's a 1 plus these things.
Not in this solution, it's 0.
This is just it's just a naked singularity so far.
But I'm looking at a non-singular one, the 0, 0, 1. At 0, 0, 1, you just have 1 plus characters, right?
So I'm saying, you have high derivative, so you have more free parameter for the normal Minkowski-like space-time.
Right.
Like you have very small correction on top of the
right. But then for your new novel solution,
mm-hmm.
you're saying these ones they go to zero, A and B go to zero.
Right,
okay.
Right. Yeah.
And then you wanna just have even powers.
Right, because this even power, because we know this non regular one also just have even power.
Yeah.
And then they have the same parameter. So
okay.
Later on we'll see. Well, they seem to have a good counterpart with each other. And we can also find the analytical solution like on the linear approximation, and this is basically just the exponential small correction to the Schwarzschild metric from this massive modes in the theory. And if this additional mode has a Planck mass, then this correction are almost invisible at any relevant distance scale. And in a recent paper of Stella, they show that this term are generally, this exponential term are generally non-zero if this metric is solved by some matter in the linearized theory. So this means in quadratic gravity, the exact structural solution actually don't have as special meaning as it has in general relativity. But what's more important is that in the fully nonlinear theory, which family of this solution are actually solved by certain type of matter distribution. And here to simplify the problem, we just find solution for a spherically thin shell, which is characterized by its physical mass and the shell radius. And with a thin shell, we can easily isolate the shell effect on the metric function. And then we can use parameter the parameter counting to see how many free parameter we need for the theoretical expansion around zero. To match with the asymptotically flat solution. And we find both these two families, they have the right number of free parameters to do this job. Next, we need to use numerical analysis to determine which of these two is the correct one for certain matter distribution. This figure gives a schematic summary of what we have found. So when this shell is much larger then there will be horizon as determined by the mass. We just get the regular star-like solution, which approaches the GR limit.
Sorry, can I say, so when you say shell, what do you mean exactly? So is it, what is the equation of a state of a shell?
So we just determine that by the Israel function
okay.
condition.
So you just
or the model.
They're not Israel.
Sorry?
You're including the, they'll get modified in the presence of these higher groups.
Yeah. So we are finding the solution in that classical action I just showed you, which has a high order term.
Okay, so the analog of the junction conditions.
So,
yeah. And then we have the similar Israel junction condition in this theory.
Yeah. So I guess the Israel junction condition they get additional R squared term. I don't know.
You're just matching. You're just solving the equations locally. Those are all.
Right. So the basically you just identify how the delta function contributes to like certain derivative of.
Do you know that's a well-defined process? I mean, with at least the Israel conditions, you know that taking a sort of zero thickness limit of a shell of matter is well-defined.
Right.
Do you know that that's the case here?
Yeah, we just assume it's the thin shell, like that has
yeah, I know, but you can show that that is a well-defined process
whether
in Einstein gravity and
some other gravity. So I'm just asking,
okay,
do you know that taking their zero fitness limit is actually a good limit for this particular Lagrangian that you have?
Okay, I see what you mean. So we haven't checked this yet. Yeah, we so currently we just solved this simple model, but yeah, later on I think we can check if we can have that limit by a 6
Well, I mean, if you must have taken the limit somehow, so
but maybe you're not guaranteed that the limit is sensible.
Okay.
A priori, something
like
that.
Okay, okay, yeah. So that would be something good to check. Right, so now if we have the shell which moves close to this will be horizon, this there solution will start to be very different from those in DR. But if we further push the shell like inside, this will be horizon, then the zero solution no longer exists anymore. And now this 2-2 even power solution appear. And this solution, the interesting thing that they remain horizonless and they closely match the equatorial Schwarzschild solution, just as determined by the dynamics. So at least we can say that in this quadratic gravity, we do have horizonless solution when the matter is very dense. So let me show.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah,
you're still thinking R, and that R is still a space-like, or is it time-like coordinate now?
R is space-like because that's no, let's see the metric, because that's no horizon.
Depends on what the metric is like. Okay.
Right. So you see, here I show you what the metric function is like.
Okay.
So the metric doesn't change psi here for any solution we're looking at.
Okay, and you're saying there just is no solution? When you try to put that, there is no solution which is regular and locally
fine. But this is regular. But it just doesn't have horizon.
No, that's singular.
Right.
Okay,
yes, that's true. I'm saying when the shell is very deep inside, then this regular solution does not exist. So I guess this is, this is just like in GR, right? We know when the matter is very dense, you don't have any star-like solution. In GR, you only have a Schwarzschild solution which has a horizon. But here I'm saying, well, you have this new type of solution.
So basically, it depends that if you insist in having a static shell smaller than horizon and then charge it radius, then this is the only solution you get, the GR.
That's what they're saying. I mean, in the GR thing, it's nonsensical for a very obvious physical reason.
But there is no solution.
Well, for an obvious reason.
Right.
That's a time like an obvious, but that's a silly thing to say.
Right.
Okay, keep on.
Right. So here I just showed, so in the next few plots, I'm showing the solution, the numerical solution we find when m equal to 10. So here I'm using the Planck unit, and the two additional modes, I'm assuming their mass are just the Planck scale. So here you see the metric function, the a and b, for one solution in each case. I'm choosing the shell radius to be relatively close to the Wolpe horizon. So you can see for both solutions, the numerical solution like agree with the Schwarzschild very well in the exterior, and in the inside, they also agree very well with the zero's expansion like to a large radius. Here you can see that for this new solution, the metric doesn't change the size; they just all the way go down to zero at the origin, and you see the big difference with the normal star-like solution we know.
But that's still inside the horizon,
What?
L is the radius of the shell, isn't it?
Yeah, this gray line is the shell, is the radius, and this is the horizon.
But, and the right, that's the zero solution, the right hand side. Right?
Yeah, this is the normal star, like the regular solution.
But it's less than the horizon, that's less than
the shell. Right. Yeah, actually, that's also a point which shows in this theory, when the shell is very close to the horizon, you can have very big, very different solution with VR. But this cannot go very far. It can just be as close to the horizon.
In GR, you go from Schwarzschild coordinates to Kruskal, Shepard's coordinates, to analytic continuation.
Right.
And then you have a different picture. So you know it's not singular.
Yeah. But here, because we don't have a horizon.
Choose different coordinates.
There is no horizon.
Yeah, we don't have horizon, so we don't have any. We don't have any need to change coordinate. Like the original coordinate is good. Yeah. Yeah. So we can also look at the curvature thing, curvature invariant for this solution. And here I'm showing this well tensor as well with the volume element because this term is the dominant term in the Lagrangian density. And here for the 0-0 solution, you see the curvature like reach a peak around the shell radius and then quickly approach the Minkowski limit. And for the 2-2 case, the curvature like become large in the interior and then it will all the way it will keep growing towards the timeline curvature singularity at the origin. So these are the serious expansion of curvature invariance around the origin. So compared to the structural singularity, this one has a less singular well tensor term. So this makes the action to remain finite in all the range of the space-time. This 2-2 solution now, it has an interior that most of the interior has a super Planckian curvature. So this kind of solution can then just only, it only makes sense in the UV theory that I just mentioned. And we can also look at the shell quantities as a function of the shell radius for each case. But for the zero case, it approach all this quantity approach the GR limit at the large shell radius. And for the 2-2 case, the interesting thing that when the shell is deep inside, the energy density has a quite different dependence on the shell radius. And this is consistent with the energy conservation on the 2-2 background. And for both cases, you can see the dominant energy condition is violated when the shell is very close to the Wolbe horizon.
So this is surface pressure and surface density.
Yeah, surface pressure and surface density. Yeah.
And what's happening there? It goes to zero for the 2-2 solution?
It's like going diverging when at one level L to the cube.
Okay, but P over sigma goes to zero, or actually goes to a constant.
No, this goes to 1/2. Yeah, this is determined by this T2's structure. Yeah.
So just to see if I'm understanding this correctly. Mm-hmm. So the solutions you're actually going to find are these 2-2 all the way out to infinity, and you're claiming it's flat space plus exponential corrections, and then you're plotting just the 0-0 up down to the Schwarzschild radius for a sake of comparison. Do I have that right, or is that wrong?
I'm saying when the shell is very big, then you get the 0-0 solution, which
okay.
In the interior it's just Minkowski,
okay,
well
fine.
Described by Minkowski, and in the outside you have those exponential correction, but very small.
Mm-hmm.
But now when the shell is very deep inside,
mm-hmm.
in this region, this new solution it show up, and it has this interior which is totally different from what we know.
I'm just trying to check, but you're saying it has the same usual GR type asymptotics.
Yeah. So in the exterior, it's just like the Schwarzschild metric.
Yeah, the 2-2 and 0-0 were just for convenience, so it's just showing that once you solve the full problem, you can approach it to 0-0 on this side and the 2-2 inside.
Right.
Okay.
But do you have any feeling or belief why this solution would be stable?
Oh,
or
yeah, that's what I'm going to say next. And so with this shell quantity, we can at least check the stability, the stability against the radial perturbation for the shell movement. And so this actually requires the second variation of the mass to be positive, and this gives some lower bound on the speed of sound of the shell matter. And also, this speed of sound also needs to be smaller than one. So I show this valid region by this pink color. So you can see that for the 0-0 solution, it's only when the shell like not very close to the horizon, then this condition can be satisfied. But for this 2-2 solution, you see, like in the whole range that we can find a solution, this solution are stable for certain reasonable matter. So I think in this sense, we're saying this 2-2 solution do have some advantage for a compact matter if you compare this like very compact star-like solution.
No, what I was thinking more is you have an outline element, you can think of the scalar field, whatever, having its own dynamic with respect to that, in that space that, and just analyze the spectral perturbations, the dispersion relation, say the wave operator in this, this line element.
So you mean just look at the perturbation, or?
Yeah, I could just, the
linearized analysis of the right. So I think that's true. Like in the next step, we should explore that. But here, there's some potential problem that's associated with this, this Planck scale additional modes. But as I'm saying, we're just using this classical theory to model that quantum theory. So, and because these modes, like in the linearized theory, has Planck scale, so probably this problem is like just a problem in this classical theory. But I mean, of course, we, like in the next step, we need to see what the linearized theory is like.
But if you have a very large black hole that the gravitational field horizon would be weak, then perturbation theory would apply. And then you have your ghost Ostrogradsky holes to deal with. The theory of the solution, isn't the solution at the horizon unstable in that case?
Not stable?
Unstable.
You mean because of what? Because of the curvature is small?
Well,
I think in our quantum picture, we're saying, like in the small curvature region, the large non-perturbative effect already removed the ghost. This is our conjecture. So if this is true, then does no unstable mode.
Yeah, but there are ghosts in the perturbation.
So they want to claim that we're living in quantum gravity. And there's there are significant quantum effects that prevent this. I don't believe this at the moment, but keep
right, right. Yeah, well, if we assume that happened.
So, I don't know if I understood the Lewis's question, that so the classical dispersion relation is just, it's the same as GR, we just have this most propagate on the life cone and the life cone does not behave. Yeah, so there isn't any. Is that when you ask for the classical dispersion relation?
In a sense, but how does it look like in this line element? How does it look in this line element?
Right. But so what are you worried about, that you can like go back in time or something? Is that
No, not back in time, that any perturbation of this will just break. I mean, there's a solution where this is just standing there, but you don't expect to come to the room and see.
So, I mean, isn't that this, whatever, this, that radial stability?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we need to really see what the linearized equation is like. Right, so then I think this 2-2 hole indeed shows some interesting feature, but to make connection with astrophysical black hole, we need to really know what the general feature of this 2-2 hole are like if it has a like very, very large mass. And because here we're solving these things numerically, so it's almost impossible to really find the solution with this large mass due to the limitation of numerical accuracy. But we do explore the solution in a range of mass. And what's surprising that we find this 2-2 hole in zero is actually governed by a very simple scaling with respect to its mass. So if we fix the shell radius in the unit of the mass, and then we find the solution, the interior solution at two different mass are related by, as shown in this table. So here I also show the Schwarzschild metric for comparison, because the Schwarzschild metric will describe the exterior of this 2-2 hole. So we know that for Schwarzschild, the metric function are the same at two mass if you rescale the radius correctly. But for the 2-2 case, the metric actually has additional scaling with this mass. So if the stellar mass is 10 times bigger, then this function just becomes 100 times smaller. And for curvature invariants, the behavior is the opposite. So we know that for the structural metric, the larger the object is, then the smaller the curvature is in its surrounding. But for this 2-2 hole, the curvature actually has no additional dependence. It's independent of M. if you have the right scaling of the radius. So this means for this 2-2 hole with any mass, with different mass, their interior are actually the same high curvature region. So this has interesting implication, like it means the action of the quadratic gravity is just scaled linearly with the mass. And the shell quantity and also the radial proper distance of this interior actually is independent of M. So this also means that actually the interior, the radial direction of this interior is actually very small. The proper distance from the origin to a radius actually quite close to the Wobbe horizon has only just the one proper Planck length. So with this scaling, if we're able to find the solution for any shell radius at one mass, this means we know this interior, like for all mass, including astrophysical large objects. So in summary, I can say that the 2-2 hole is just a very simple object. It has this very, these two very different scaling regions, and which is connected by some transition around the Wobbe horizon. But unfortunately, this region can only be explored numerically, and later I will show some quantity are indeed sensitive to this, and I'll show more detail about what this transition is like at that point. So now we can see like what the point particle motion is like for such a background. And we know that the geodesic equation for a spherically symmetric background has like two constants of motion, and its only non-trivial equation is for the radial motion, which is determined by the potential term. It includes the angular momentum potential and the mass term, so as shown by the solid and the dashed line here. So at small radius, it's the angular momentum part, potential that's dominant, and its inverse determines the upper bound of this L over E for the geodesic at one radius. And here I showed you the potential for the 2-2 solution with two different mass. So actually, with that scaling that I just mentioned, we know that this potential in the interior will actually become deeper with increasing mass. So basically, it will be extremely deep for an astrophysical 2-2 hole. Here I also show a potential for the gravistar. It's basically just an example for the general ultra-compact star. So you can see for the 2-2 hole, there's no centrifugal repulsion at the origin for any geodesic. And also there's no additional light ring either for the 2-2 hole.
Yeah, but outside the star sheet, everything is the same as GR, right?
Right, that's true. So everything like outside the star sheet is just the same. So you have the same unstable light ring, yeah, the star sheet, but yeah, here you have this huge, very, very deep gravitational potential in the interior. So this means if you have particle collision in the interior, then this particle collision can very easily have a super Planckian center of mass energy. And so this will produce like a large number of particles, and some may have reduced energy and then just get trapped in the gravitational potential. But actually, there's another fact which make it very difficult for this decay, for this collision product to go out to reach the outside observer. So this is related to this big difference of the angular momentum potential at the light ring and in the interior, because this difference suggests, it implies that most likely the internal collision will produce particle that has L over E, which is just outside of the escape cone at the collision point. So basically, this escape cone in the orthonormal frame will be very small. So this means after multiple collision of particle, you will get this trapped, very large trapped surface to be populated, and only a very small fraction that can escape. So from just this very simple particle picture, we could imagine that this object, it will appear extremely dark due to this property. And also if you have like any later accretion of matter into this object, they will get efficiently absorbed, and so that this matter just causes the increasing of the mass of the object. So here we're trying to say, even though there's no horizon of this object, but it can like just appear black, like a real black hole.
So is this luminosity similar to Hawking luminosity, or is this bigger, I guess, or is it bigger?
It's actually depend on, yeah, I mean, I think this to answer that question, we need to really know what the matter is like, or like what this collision is like. So here we're just saying, generally you get this very big suppression, but I think it will be comparable to Hawking.
I think it's comparable.
Depend on the assumption about like what's the what the internal collision process is going. Okay, so now I'm going to I'm at this point that whether it's a problem to have a time-like curvature singularity. So of course this implies that any particle that goes into that any geodesic that goes into this hole will end at this singularity within finite proper time. But this geodesic incompleteness may not imply any physical ambiguity, because point particle may not be just the well approximation for the physical probe. And so in the context of classical field theory, here we are saying this T2 singularity actually appears regular when it is probed by the finite energy wave packet. This means we need to define a regular wave dynamics for this wave packet. And intuitively, this just it's possible to define a regular wave dynamics if there's a unique way to impose the boundary condition at the origin. Actually, as initiated by Robert Ward and many other people, they're developing some more rigorous procedure to justify this possibility. So here we just follow that procedure, and we just find, if you look at the near origin behavior for this wave function, there's only one that have finite energy. So in this sense, we're saying this function give a unique way to define the boundary condition at the origin. So for the T2 Hall case, it's actually define a Newman boundary condition at the origin.
But sorry, if I look at scatterings of multiple things,
mm-hmm.
So if I've got a curvature singularity, then they should show up in the geodesic deviation equation. So I can claim that I'm going to get, I have physical measurable quantities that can diverge.
Right, I think so, because you have all the high curvature regions. So
yeah.
It definitely will see this effect, the physical effect. But I'm just saying it's not a physical problem or the fundamental problem to have.
I would say you can measure something that's infinite. That's a real problem.
Ray packets done. Okay, then what's the problem? I mean,
no, you can measure arbitrarily large. So I would say that's trouble.
So I mean, because in this picture, we can talk about
whatever so
higher curvature energy,
fun,
right?
But if you're going to look at multiple things, you're going to see the problem.
Yeah, but that's the question. It's not clear that there is a problem. I mean, for linear as a question, it's not. But maybe if you think about non-linear.
I'm just saying, the geodesic deviation is going to divert as you approach this thing.
Right.
So even if I can pull off all this,
right,
that's dicey.
Right.
If in fact it's bigger than Planck length, then is that, and it's okay, then, yeah, because I mean they cannot get arbitrary close to each other.
Sorry, I'm confused. What is phi L1 and phi L2?
So these are just two independent, linearly independent solutions of the field equation. Of the scalar field.
Phi L1 is the one.
Well, so here you just look at the like the leading order term for these two solutions around the origin. And so I'm just saying like one solution, it's just a constant. It starts from the constant.
Okay.
So like this slide is for just the regular space time, and this is what we know. And so I'm just saying this to for the 2-2 hole, if you look at this solution for the wave, it looks very similar to the S wave on a regular space time.
And you're saying that it's non-singular, so the phi-1, this phi-2 is one rr.
So this one is this one has problem. This one has problem. So we're saying only this one has no problem. So it is, so this one determines the boundary condition at the origin. So then there's no ambiguity introduced by the singularity in the wave equation. Okay. So now with the regular wave equation, we just realized that the old break wall model for the black hole entropy can be very easily adapted to this 2-2 hole. So probably some people don't really know what this break wall is. So in this model, Tohoof is trying to expand the black hole entropy by some just ordinary thermal entropy of the thermal atmosphere. So he basically like confines some thermal quantum field inside a very large box, but now with the reflecting boundary reflecting in a boundary which located very close to the Wolbe horizon, he also assumed this field are in the thermal equilibrium, so the local temperature will be very large when it's in this inner boundary. So if you calculate the entropy of this thermal field, besides this trivial contribution from volume in the wave gravity distance, it's mainly dominant by this inner boundary, also called the break wall contribution. So he finds, if assuming this thermal field has a Hawking temperature, then the error law can be recovered if this break wall just locates like one Planck proper length outside of the black hole. But in his toy model, one problem is that how could you predict such a kind of small distance from the UV theory. And the second problem is that people worry there could be large back reaction from the break wall on the metric because of the large energy. But in a later paper of Israel and the collaborators, they are saying if we are using this model now to ultra-compact horizonless object, then because this for this kind of background, the vacuum of the quantum field will be the Bourdieu vacuum. And so if you consider the negative Bourdieu vacuum energy, then it will naturally cancel this thermal energy if it has the Hawking temperature. So in this sense, they are saying, well, this calculation of the entropy does make sense. So then with this insight, we can just generalize such a discussion to the 2-2 hole we have, but now we don't have this arbitrary break wall, we just replace it by the origin. And here we also just consider the case if the back reaction is from this thermal gas is just negligible, and we think this thermal temperature should also be proportional to the Hawking temperature. So under this very special case, with the 2-2 hole metric, we find this thermal entropy and the energy are finite, even though the temperature is like going diverging at the origin. And in particular, this integral is just dominated by the imperial contribution. And with the scaling law that I just mentioned, we find the entropy actually just got the error law from this imperial integration. So here,
do you
don't
get
have
the exact thing, like one quarter, or just aboard the.
No, so we don't get exactly the Bacon-Sand-Hawking temperature, because I think it's because we don't have horizon, so it's not that clear what Hawking radiation means, like in this picture.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this at least is some interesting observation which show, well, this interior do have some funny feature. And now this time-like singularity is covered by a fireball, you can say, because this field like reach arbitrary high temperature at the origin. So finally, with this solution, I can estimate that time delay for the echo signals in the gravitational wave. as I mentioned at the beginning of the talk. So this time spacing basically depending on the integration of the speed of light from the light ring to all the way to the origin. And so this plot shows what this speed of light is like for this diagram. So it's just a radial peak around the horizon, but then quickly like approach a constant in the interior. And if you enlarge, and so for different mass, it's only the peak region that's changing. And if you enlarge this region, you can see with increasing mass, the peak gets higher and higher, and it's also become closer to the Wobbe horizon. So then we can just parameterize this position, and then we find this delta. It's actually dropped faster than 1 over m, and this power is slowly increasing with m. So with all of this, we can then estimate what this time delay is like, and dividing it into three pieces. So this delta T1 is purely from the interior contribution, so it's just a constant. Its ratio with m is just a constant. And the delta T2, it includes, in addition, the peak, the inner peak contribution. And delta T3 is the outer peak contribution. And because the exterior agree with structural metric, so we can get the analytical expression for this delta T3, which now just depends on this power for the peak position. And what's interesting is that you see this asymmetric shape of the peak here. So this means actually this inner peak contribution is quite subdominant than the outer peak. So in this sense, even though we don't really have analytical understanding of the description of this region, but this time delay is the estimation is still under control. Because we find the asymptotically, this power actually looks consistent with 2, which means the proper distance between the peak and the horizon is just the 1 Planck length. So with all of this, we can get a pretty narrow range about what the time delay is like for the astral physical big object. So, and actually this is very close to what Mia Yash is using in his paper trying to look for this signal in the LIGO data. So we hope at least this provides a better example for all this exploration in the observational side. So yeah, this brings to the end of my talk. So in this talk, just with this new perspective on the quadratic gravity, we're able to talk about this horizonless solution, which looks very similar to the structural solution from exterior, but have this large curvature interior, which have this very interesting feature. So we also hope this tutorial can become like provide some motivation to study the quantum theory in the strong phase. And it could also serve as a benchmark for the exploration of gravitational wave signal. So there are many open questions left. So I hope you may find some interesting thing out of this. So thank you.
So before taking questions, Ting will be here today and tomorrow. Her office is 333, and we're gonna have dinner, a speaker dinner at 6:30. So everybody's welcome to join. So Luis.
Yeah, and this echoes picture.
Yeah.
So as opposed to this, in the case of the IH discussed in Europe, you have the interior of the black hole is fine, and
right.
You have a singularity even at the center.
Right.
Why would the echo have to come lower, higher? Do you have any idea of what the amplitude of that echo
should
be?
Oh, you mean like how, like the damping, how fast the
echo? No, not just the amplitude. I mean, principally, it could go in
uh-huh,
with
uh-huh.
value 1 and come back to value of medium.
Right.
So why not?
So actually, I think we can find that by solving the field equation with that reflecting boundary condition we have.
But why do you have a reflecting boundary condition?
So
that at that point you have to have another theory that takes
yeah,
over.
Just as I said, for the this time-like singularity defies the Newman boundary condition
right.
At the origin. So now we're just using that boundary condition to solve this wave equation, right?
Yeah, but I mean, given that you have a singularity there,
right,
it could reflect back with more energy than it came in.
They're claiming they just enclosed it.
Right, but it
violates the usual rules.
But I guess it's an innocuous singularity because you could set this boundary condition and everything is perfectly fine. So.
Well, the thing that when we just look at the wave equation, then you will see that this geometric doesn't really like do anything very violent to the wave equation. So this effect, it looks just very mild. So it's very different from the particle picture. Like from particle picture, you will think, well, you have large curvature, then you will probably get the very violent interaction in that region. But then in the wave equation, it just looks quite normal. And then we have that the boundary condition, Neumann boundary condition.
Yeah, but it would be surprising you wouldn't be able to put the set boundary condition there if an arbitrary factor, so you have a factor of 1 or you have a factor of 10.
For what? For the boundary condition?
Yeah, for boundary condition you're imposing to the waves.
Mm.
I'd be surprised that it wouldn't be, if you claim it's well posed with boundary 1, I'd be surprised if it's not well posed with boundary 10.
No, but I think the point is that not all singularities are equal. Some singularities are tamer than others, like I think that cosmic strings is very so. And I think that they're arguing that the singularity is tame enough that even though violet square diverges, like all the energies, like the integrated quantities are finite. So they
Will you find that if I change from 1 to 10?
No, but I think that, so they said you cannot extract energy out of it. If it comes in, it should come out with the same energy. That's the thing. If it has infinite energy, then of course it doesn't make sense. But if it has a finite energy, then, or zero energy, I guess in your case, if it has zero energy, then you cannot extract energy out of it. So I think that's my understanding. Because the integrated
quantities
are finite.
Right, right. We require just finite energy.
Yes, Avery. Yeah.
So I would add an observational test. A number of years ago, Ramesh Narayan and I and Abhilo wrote a paper on looking at exactly this sort of situation where you have spherically symmetric stationary space-times, arbitrary space-time, and asked what do observations of accreting black holes tell us? And now there are ways around the argument, but for Sagittarius Star, it's very clear that you have to have at least an apparent horizon. The way around it is to say that the system is not stationary, but it's not clear to me that that's going to be the case in your setup. So I'm not quite sure what to say about it, except definitely take a look. I'd be happy to talk about it. But there are accretion limits that make it very hard to have to not have a horizon in known objects.
Are you talking about just the but I think in that case, do you assume like this object has some kind of reflection boundary so that all the energy should be reflecting back?
I think people get caught up on the word surface, but what we're really assuming is the photosphere is visible.
Uh-huh.
And that's it, right? So like neutron stars don't have a reflecting boundary, but they do have a visible photosphere. They have an atmosphere. So you're building as material accretes into your 2-2 hole, you're going to develop a photosphere inside,
uh-huh.
right? And you're going to have a high redshift, but not infinite redshift surface outside of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that fills all of the conditions we require. The only question is how long does it take for your photosphere inside to reach steady state and all of this? And this is a quantitative question that we can answer. I don't have an answer off the top of my head. Just wanted to note that that's important.
Right. Yeah, sure. So I think I know that paper, and we're also curious just like how general does our case can be included in that case. Yes, I'm happy to, we can discuss more on this later.
Yep.
Yes.
I'm also surprised that it's possible to put the boundary condition in the singularity, because I think that, as I understand the idea of the singularity, as putting a boundary condition, you are imposing in some way the physics of this region. And the idea of the singularity, I think that is that we don't know what happens in the singularity. It's different, for example, in the time-like boundary of ADS, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's not a singularity, you can put the boundary condition. So I'm not surprised. And the question is, nothing to do with it. Did you study or what about the causal structure near the singularity? It's like this in the spherical symmetric solution, similar to Schwarzschild in GR, or
What
the council, what are the cones? The cones near the singularity.
Yeah,
so
it's
once you go to the singularity, it's not possible to return. What
I mean,
about
the
906?
Well, I think the causal structures are the same as like very close to the Wolbe horizon, right? Because you see the metric function never changes size. It's like it's become very small. So
yeah.
Like the light cone will be very small, but it will never like close or.
But the unique is to fall to the singularity. Not possible to return.
Okay, so you're asking what happened when
yeah.
it hit the singularity and going back.
It's plausible the movement of. Maybe not the geodesic, sometimes like or some particle move curve inside
uh-huh.
the cones
uh-huh,
to
uh-huh.
go through the singularity and then return. But my problem is because since we have
right. So actually
horizon.
I think it can also like just go through. Because
yeah.
when I'm saying the reflecting, I'm talking about a spherical wave, right? So you have a spherical wave which just the shrinking the size, then it went through the singularity and then. And then it grows large. So in that sense, I'm saying it's reflecting. But if you are in the particle picture, I think you can just go through that point. You can think in that way.
Okay.
So in the interest of time and the fact that we have another talk at 1, let's thank Ding again.